So, good afternoon, everybody. Just a quick agenda update. I'd like to communicate Performance Food Group. They will now present at 3:45 P.M., Rose Kennedy Ballroom 5. So just that you know the agenda update for whoever wanted to attend Performance Food Group. Now, with that said, I'd like to introduce Tyson, one of the world's largest food companies, recognized leader in protein, portfolio of iconic retail brands, including Tyson, Jimmy Dean, Hillshire Farm, Ball Park, and the company is definitely on track for its sixth consecutive year of record earnings. Joining us today from Tyson, Tom Hayes, President and CEO. Welcome. John Cafell, Vice President of Investor Relations for the past 7 years and nearly 35 years with the company. So just quick background, Tom has led the largest U.S. food company since late 2016, spearheading its transformation to a modern food company, putting sustainability at the center of everything Tyson Foods does. A consumer products veteran with more than 30 years of experience, Tom has a track record of growing businesses by evolving them alongside customers and consumers. He joined Tyson Foods with the acquisition of the Hillshire Brands company in 2014. There he served as a Chief Supply Chain Officer. Now, executing on several acquisitions since his tenure started, Tyson, under Tom's leadership, just closed in on another acquisition, adding Keystone Foods from Marfrig. So maybe to start it off, Tom, and thank you very much for coming. A lot has happened. I mean, it's just about a month that you reported third quarter results. You've got an acquisition. There was some progress in NAFTA. We saw a little bit of an improvement in pork packer margins. Anything like just in the last three, 4 weeks has a little bit changed your outlook, if you could talk us through that?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for listening in, and thanks for being here. And I will say it's been busy, but it doesn't seem like it's ever not busy. There's always a lot going on in our business. And let me start by saying that we will be making some forward-looking statements. Please refer to our 10-Q, 10-K for additional information, disclaimers about any risks that are associated with our business. Having said that, given the fact that we did just announce earnings, we had a lot to talk about at that point, as well as a lot that has changed in between. The first thing to share is that we have had some, I think, consistent performance within our chicken business. So I feel good about where the chicken business is this quarter. And our prepared foods business continues to be extraordinarily strong. So very excited about those two businesses. Beef and pork, they have continued to improve. So I think some of you may subscribe to Hedger's Edge. You see some of that performance. Our beef and pork business is doing well. And so those things that gave us concern going into the call, which were areas that we were primarily talking about that caused us to take our guidance down, we've felt much better about that here in the near term. And so not going to talk about that much more detail, give you the qualitative sort of side of that, but the quantitative part I'll leave for after we close the year and we have our year-end call, but feeling good about where we are.
And in terms of the acquisition, so clearly, I mean, Keystone was a big one, a little over $2 billion in cash to be dispersed. Can you talk about the rationale behind the acquisition?
Yeah, Keystone is a tremendous acquisition for Tyson and on two important fronts. One is, as we continue to try to develop a more value-added business in the U.S., they have a wonderful business with McDonald's and other customers, but continuing to drive par-fried or fully cooked volume as a greater percentage of our overall sales is an important element to our growth domestically. And so from that perspective, a great addition to the family. And they have a fantastic team. In the U.S., they're known very well by what they do for McDonald's, but I would tell you that they have just been consistently a strong player overall in the industry. And then from an international perspective, what we really like is that it provides a platform for growth. Their team is well respected. We've had a chance to meet their leadership team. Haven't done an extraordinary deep dive, but enough to see that based on our history, seeing them in the marketplace and then having met some of them, that it's going to be a wonderful marriage and using that to, you know, drive some synergy between our current business in China, as well as using that professionalism that they've grown that business to execute against a growth agenda for the balance of our international platform with a focus in Asia.
Okay. So that's basically, I mean, in terms of the integration of that international business of Keystone, it's going to be kind of a blueprint for you and where you're going to build off. That's something to add on to further get more international exposure, or how should we think about it?
I'd say both inorganically and organically. There's certainly their business can grow with the assets they have today, whether it's expansion through CapEx investment in the current facilities and leveraging any unused capacity that they might have, particularly in the South Korea plant. But importantly, they have done a really nice job of serving in-country demand with the assets that are there, but then using those assets to serve export demand, and something that we don't do necessarily in our current business in China. And so we're really looking forward to being a great partner, continuing with the customers that they already have, but using that platform to grow innovation and the products that they have started to spend a lot more time developing that are not just for food service, but also for retail channels to leverage the combined strength of our Tyson demand generation capabilities with that new platform for growth. And we will also be looking to acquire businesses to add to it.
Okay. Now, you've mentioned it already, so just following up on one of the commentary, I mean, obviously, Keystone was a big supplier, or is a big supplier to McDonald's. Is there any pushback on that side, anything amongst the names, I mean, within the food service customers, where you saw a little bit of a concern just because of the concentration that's now going to be with you, or how do you... What's the sense from your customers?
The sense that we've got is that they want strong global suppliers, and they want suppliers that are going to be able to bring innovation, but also bring cost and quality consistently. We have demonstrated as a supplier here in the U.S. that we do that for our customers. And so I'd say they are excited about the prospects of us becoming a larger partner internationally. And we are equally excited to make sure that we continue to up the ante. Yeah. So there's not a lot that we don't know about the customers that we deal today. The most important thing, though, is that they are going to continue to drive for growth. And so they see us as a partner that, given the prospects we have with overall protein demand and how it continues to be a tailwind for a lot of, companies in the food service space, retail, I think new customers will take advantage of those capabilities, too.
Okay. Yeah. Now, just... following up a little bit, and obviously there's a lot of moving pieces, but when we saw the purchase price, $2.2 billion was actually much lower than was initially talked about. There were numbers that were about a third higher at the very beginning, and then the closing came in at a pretty attractive price here. But then at the same time, I guess a little bit of a disappointment from the market participants in terms of the synergies. So you've guided out about $50 million in 3 years. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing there and how we should think about the cautiousness of that number?
Certainly. We've talked actually quite a bit. We've had some meetings, of course, leading up to this, some one-on-one meetings, group meetings with investors, and that has been a popular discussion point. Could you do more? I think the answer is we probably can, but we want to make sure we have a chance to connect with the team both domestically and internationally to have them partner with us to develop those plans. We found that when we did that with Advanced Pierre, what we thought going in the synergies were going to be, the coming away from the dialogue and that teamwork, was that there was a lot more to take advantage of. They know the markets, I would say, better than we do, and so to at least in the international, and so getting them to partner to say what's the best way we can make us the most cost-effective company without sacrificing quality or, the growth prospects, I expect the teams will come together to solve that, and it could be something more than what we've declared so far.
So along those lines, Ben, just to recap, we paid $2.16 billion for the asset. We expect synergies of $50 million on a post-synergy basis. That would imply a multiple of around roughly 8.5 times, maybe a tick less. So. We feel like the asset is of high quality. Certainly, not the least bit would be their team. We think that's a great, great asset, and their plants are in great shape.
Okay. Perfect. Now, let's stay with the topic, and you've mentioned a couple of things. I mean, obviously, capital allocation, we've seen a lot of acquisitions over the last couple of years. We had Keystone just very recently, but it was also American Protein, Smart Chicken, Original Philly, then a little over a year ago, Advanced Beer. So you're looking to do more on the M&A side, or are you going to be now focused on debt reduction, leverage, and what about stock buybacks?
The answer is all the above. So we generated a lot of cash, and so we want to continue to pull those levers, whether we're acquiring companies or we're buying back stock, certainly increasing our dividend. I would say our track record has been good. In the last quarter, we bought back about $120 million worth of our own stock, close to $370 million this fiscal year. And over the last 3 years, over $3 billion worth. And so that's something we want to continue. We do buy back, and I know the question is, well, can you accelerate that? We think acquisitions like Keystone, when they come up, we need to have the readiness to do that for the long term. But then also, we do have the constant discussion about how quickly can we pay down that debt, when do we need to step in to buy back our own stock. But it's nice to have the ability to pull all those levers.
The other thing I would add is an acquisition like Keystone is a great illustration of these aren't just based on synergies. It's about growing a good business and freeing up capital to help them achieve the next level. So in this case, Keystone fits very well into our entire asset base, but it's about unleashing the potential of that group. So it's not just about cost savings.
Okay. Perfect. So just to quickly stay within the buybacks, I mean, obviously, the multiple of the stock has come down recently. I mean, there was a little blip and then up again. But I mean, the real buyback right now, you don't think is like the best way of using capital? I mean, we've seen Keystone was a very good acquisition. I mean, obviously, that balance, but there's nothing you would go out to more aggressively buy stock, right?
It's not so we wouldn't. We always want to preserve our optionality to do that, and that is the important point, is we do have optionality. We right now, we're subscribed. We want to buy this asset. We want to pay down the debt. And to the extent that we see there's an opportunity in the future, we'll take advantage of it, but we don't want to give up any optionality that we have.
This would be all about taking advantage of the situation. And the fact is, the situation or opportunity of acquiring Keystone came about now. So that's what prompted the thought of, let's go for this now because it fits our long-term growth strategy extremely well.
Okay. All right. Might we switch gears and then come to that very funny topic, tariffs, trade, and so on?
Not so funny to us.
I know. I mean, it was a little sarcastic anyway. So how's the export business of you guys doing, and what are you seeing? I mean, the general landscape, and then I'll have maybe some topical questions into that.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about it, then ask John to weigh in. He's kind of our resident expert on the beef and pork business. And so yeah, overall, I would say that things have been going fairly well. Our export business is very strong. It doesn't seem to be any hiccups as it relates to the volume that's flowing. It's moving, particularly in the pork business, at a lower value sometimes. So that has created a lot of availability in the U.S., which has in turn affected chicken pricing over this past summer, which is something we talked about on the call. But the overall business continues to perform pretty well. The way that things work is the market will clear the products, though they will be consumed. It's just a matter of where they go and at what price, and that is what has moved around a little bit.
So over the last year, all of the increased production in the U.S. has been consumed by the export market. So the assumption is that will continue to happen. As Tom mentioned, all the meat will still clear. So we need for these export markets to remain open. And a term Tom uses all the time, which I think is very appropriate, is we need that certainty of trade. Uncertainty is what hurts these markets. And the tough part about that is we, as a packer in our beef and pork businesses, we end up having to pass that back to the producer. Good news or bad news makes its way back to that hog farmer or that cattle rancher. So Within a short period of time, yes, it squeezes us, but on a longer period basis, it's not good for the American livestock producer. So we're encouraged. We're starting to hear the right things. Certainly, the Mexico discussions have gone very well, but we need for that market to remain open. Mexico is our largest export market and a large consumer of U.S. hams, and it's critically important to that pork market that the hams continue to make their way to Mexico.
Okay. So, I mean, basically, I mean, if everything's still moving, and what's actually moving during the third quarter, what was it would actually pressure the margins on the pork business so much? And putting into perspective your outlook for Q3 or for last quarter, I mean, you're basically looking for just a little over break-even if we just take the full year guidance, what you had in the first 9 months. It's an easy math. Zero point something.
Yeah.
So.
Well, to be clear, what we see today is different than what we saw.
Three weeks ago.
Three weeks ago. So things have gotten better, which is good. But also, there's because of the just going back to the availability, when there's more supply available, then that will obviously affect price. As John said, it eventually moves its way back to the producer. And so we're going to beat the same drum over and over that we want certainty. We want these trade deals to be done. We want them to be done in a favorable way towards the U.S. producers and processors, and that we have an amazing engine in U.S. agriculture, and we just want to play on a level playing field around the rest of the world. But we will see from time to time that noise, if you will, affect margins. It tends to be a lag before it goes back to the producer. But we're always going to make our money in the spread between the cutout and the price that we pay the hog farmers and cattle farmers.
So within the third quarter and actually into the beginning of our fiscal fourth quarter, early July, what you are seeing is not the result of the tariffs pressuring margin as much as these new harvest facilities that were coming up in the Midwest. Those new entrants were paying more money for hogs, irregardless of the fact that pork values were coming down at the same time. So that caused the imbalance in a margin shift for us. We've since seen that return to a more normal relationship where the value of pork is driving the price for hogs, and that's ultimately our margin is the difference between those two.
Okay. Very good. Now, one of the topics, and it's come up in some of the other meetings, the African swine fever and the potential implications on global supply, especially on the hog side, and then obviously subsequently pork. Anything you can comment on what your expectations are, what you're seeing in the markets? I mean, you have some business in China. That's where I think it's mostly affected. So any thoughts there?
The first thought is when the news broke that there was a challenge with African swine fever, the cash hog price reflected it. So there's reason to believe that to the extent that there's going to be less hogs available in China, that there would be more supply moving from the U.S., not so much maybe from Tyson, but there would be a change in the way that the market's being served, and that could create potentially a price-supportive situation in the U.S. for hog farmers. Don't know what's going to happen. It seems like it's a pretty fluid situation. Does seem pretty severe, to be honest, but what would you add?
Yeah. Historically, number one, it's not dangerous to humans, but within China, you will see spots occur 700 and 800 miles apart. So the degree to which they have this in hand, we really don't know. But as Tom said, we as Tyson are not likely to fill this market, but somebody from the U.S. will. And that will create disappearance, which creates an opportunity for our pork to get into more places. And ultimately, in the short run, that's very good for us. But on a longer-term basis, it really helps that American livestock producer again. So I will tell you, our piece of this is simply spread or relationship management. But ultimately, that would be good for the American livestock producer. But certainly, we don't wish that upon anybody because African swine fever would require a culling of a herd. So within a certain radius, the government would be likely to step in and eliminate the hog supply in that immediate area. That's what history would tell you. At this point, we hear of instances, but how widespread it is, we don't really know.
Along those lines, I mean, obviously, there are going to be second derivative implications from that if that were to happen. I mean, we've seen that the chicken business had been somewhat under pressure because of the strong supply on the red meat side, not only beef, but also pork. I mean, obviously, if some of that were to disappear, maybe your chicken business as well wouldn't be as much pressured. I mean, we've had the summer with the food service being relatively weak, retail also not as strong as it used to be over summer. So going into coming quarters, that could be a little bit of a relief on the chicken side as well, correct?
Yeah, that would stand to reason given that what we just talked about and what we saw this past summer. As you said, when the pork prices were as low as they were and product was available, we did see quite a bit of a transition from chicken to pork and beef. And that is unlike anything that we've seen in the past. There's not a time in which we can go back to that looks exactly like this summer did. And so that, to the extent that the supply was not there, it certainly would, I think, abate that situation.
Okay. Now, coming back to the trade thing, I think you've mentioned it earlier. I mean, with Mexico, obviously, the U.S. has made some decent progress. They're currently sitting together with Canada to come up with an NAFTA deal. Maybe it's not going to be NAFTA. It's just going to be bilateral. How does that impact you? Because you've mentioned Mexico is a very important export market, but maybe you can share a couple of numbers and give us a little bit of a better sense how much Mexico actually matters for you.
To start, all of our relationships are certainly important. We want to have certainty, like we talked about, in all trade deals. But Mexico is our fifth largest trading partner. And so from that perspective, it's very, very important to us. And I would say from a certainly pork or ham perspective, the most important market that we have probably on those products. Canada is the fifth largest trading partner, so not as significant. But we'd still like to see the entire deal be done with all of North America. It's just, to me, in our company, it makes more sense to have one agreement versus two, to have more of a fair trade flowing, and to use it as an example to get more deals done around the world. The more that we have the ability to access those markets and have strong, productive relationships that allow the flow, the better off we are always.
Yeah, I would just add the entire supply chain as it relates to food is better served by free trade and open markets than it is to have a tariff. Tariffs just create inefficiency, and the best way to satisfy the consumer in the long run is by free trade.
Okay. So maybe a couple of questions on the chicken segment, which continues to be an important one. So clearly, there was a little bit of pressure recently. But can we also talk about the buy versus grow strategy? And obviously, with the integration of Keystone, which is just partially self-sufficient, how is that going to look like going forward?
Well, so buy versus grow is a tool that we use. We've been using it for the last 6 or 7 years. And basically what that does is allow us to stay short of our total demand and then take advantage of markets when they're low, particularly on breast meat. And it didn't play out that way this summer because our volume didn't come through, so we didn't have the ability to take advantage of that tool. If you think about our production, if we have 90% is produced by internally by Tyson, and we go on 10% of the market. If we get 10% miss on volume or something of that magnitude, it doesn't allow us the availability to take advantage of that as a tool. So, to the extent that we get back on track, I think it's it is absolutely something we'll continue to take advantage of. It just didn't play out that way because of the volume that we did not achieve that we had in our plan. Well, with Keystone, they do have some outside purchases. So they acquire from companies that are not fully integrated. So they provide an opportunity for us to serve them that way, maybe internalize some of that business or not. But it will fold into the whole buy versus grow strategy once they become part of the family.
Okay.
I would add on the buy versus grow, anytime something like that happens, we do a bit of self-evaluation and say, what did we miss? And I would tell you, we look back 60 plus years, and we've never seen this happen before. where chicken actually lost share to beef and pork. So it's a case where the relative price gap between those proteins closed enough where food service operators felt they could feature burgers, retailers felt they could feature pork at retail or ground beef. So, you know, quite honestly, we just haven't seen a situation where chicken became out of favor for a short period of time. Now, does that return to normal? We're seeing early indications that yes, that's probably going to happen, the timing of which we don't know yet. But certainly, we see our way forward through this as to continue to sell. And as Tom said, we need to continue to be able to take advantage of this very inexpensive commodity meat that's on the market out there, and one we can take advantage of by buying.
Okay, now the most important topic, prepared foods. That's been something that has had exactly the effect you were looking for, margin stability. I mean, clearly, maybe not the margins yet that you might want to achieve in the long run, but still a more stable level, better performance there as well with in terms of growth, and then obviously profitability being very strong. What's the focus you're putting on that? How do you want to further increase share within the total Tyson company to have more within prepared foods?
You know, prepared foods does a number of things for Tyson. You know, the first thing that we think about is an ongoing innovation engine to drive growth, particularly with the Jimmy Dean brand, Hillshire, Ball Park, as well as some emerging brands like Aidells, Golden Island. And so we are extraordinarily excited about the ability to continue to feed that engine for growth. Jimmy Dean is a perfect example of when we get it right, what that can create. The other thing is, because of the nature of our relationships with the other parts of the company, whether it's the pork division or even some of the poultry, but certainly the beef division, those feed, you know, the prepared foods business in a way that, you know, there's a relationship that is intertwined on just valuing up those raw materials. The job that the team has done in the last 12 months has been remarkable, with getting that to a sustainable margin business that is, you know, north of 10% is one thing, but to continue on the growth trajectory and to continue to invest in innovation and, you know, really run this $8 billion business to the point where we're growing EBIT and expanding margins and building a culture of winning behind everything that Sally and the team are doing. Sally Grimes, who's our group president, couldn't be happier with that. Having said that, we know we can go a lot farther. So she is always pressing the team to get more, do more. And whether it's taking advantage of, you know, the recent acquisitions that we've made and stepping into, you know, other areas of the store through Advanced Pierre's business and thinking about different ways to innovate through the Innovation Lab, which is this new sort of Skunk Works organization that's been established to attack new brands quickly and create new brands. Those are the things that, you know, are really generating some life in the prepared foods business. And I'd say we're continuing to press.
The one thing I'd add, if you look back 4 years ago, Legacy Tyson Prepared Foods, selling roughly $4 billion in sales, and essentially break even because they were investing in brands. You compare that to today, we're $8 to $9 billion. We're likely going to cross $1 billion in operating income next year. This year we're 11%, so it would tell you we're roughly $900 million in operating income. So, the things they do to continue to lead the market in terms of category growth, growth has not been absent from Tyson the last few years, and that's because of the things the Prepared Foods Group is doing to zig when maybe others zag, and they're taking those steps just simply to drive category growth. And I looked at the latest four-week IRI data today, and I look at some of the things that are happening there, and, you know, the areas where we're losing a little bit of share, it's because we're making a lot more money. And the areas where we really want to grow share, we're growing share. So it's not a once, it's not just volume or profits, it's a mix, right? So encouraged by what we're seeing there, and it's got us in a good place going forward.
I mean, staying on the topic of innovation and creativity, you've been quite active with venture capital, alternative meat solutions and so on, and obviously innovating new products, but also like reusing. I mean, Jabba is one of the things. So if you could talk a little bit about that venture arm and the initiatives to source plant-based or lab-based protein instead of animal-based protein.
Yeah. Tyson Ventures is, I think, changing the way that not only the company views areas for growth, but also just the way that people are working together in addition to the innovation lab. And what it's done is put us in a position, whether it's a new technology that's really nascent, still being developed, or something that we know as a space that is starting to really grow, like plant-based protein. It puts us in a spot where we can actively disrupt ourselves in some cases, and that's something that we need to do as a big company in a space that is going to be disrupted at some point. And it puts us in the forefront of new technologies that are being made available to make our business overall better or our industry better. And so the investments that we have made to date are all in those spaces that push our thinking, allow us to take advantage of trends that are happening with consumers, and to position us to either be outright owners of the business or at least be an equity partner that is driving idea generation, as well as just learning from them things that we should know in order to advance in our own initiatives. It's a $150 million fund. We've sort of barely scratched the surface in terms of investments, but I think that overall we're very satisfied with where we are today.
Yeah. And on the innovation side, with Jabba, if you can comment. I mean, that's like kind of the very new thing as well, and there's been a lot of talk about, and you've presented it nicely just about half a year ago at CAGNY, so maybe a quick update on that.
Yeah, so far so good. So it's Yappa?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a small business, but it's a protein chip that takes products that are going to go to waste, whether it's trimmed pieces of chicken or spent grains. It could be juice parts that from the pulping industry that are available to combine into great-tasting new flavors, that it's a chip in a can. And so far, we've got a lot of great enthusiasm around it. It's slow build, but we have high expectations for how that product will turn out.
Okay. Well, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I guess the thing that I would ask everybody to take away is that the company continues to stay focused on the long-term growth of the business. We will continue to be allocating capital to that end. And so for the long haul, we're going to be focused on continuing to grow a business with differentiated capabilities, delivering what we say we're going to deliver in the way of cost savings and financial fitness, and then also focus on sustainability as we drive for long-term total shareholder return. We're not satisfied. We're not happy with the results we've had recently as it relates to some of the issues that we've talked about. And we're anxious to continue to demonstrate that we have learnings from that. We're going to apply them, and we're going to drive the model aggressively forward fast. And so I appreciate your coming out to listen to us, and happy for
yeah.
Being here with you.
If there are a couple of questions, maybe we have 5 minutes before we go to the breakout. And yeah.
I think you used the word consistent when you talked about how chicken or poultry has performed quarter to date. And I was just trying to, earlier you just expressed disappointment or being surprised. But when you said consistent, I think you seemed like your tone was sort of positive. And then I guess John was saying too, just feeling like there's some evidence that you've turned the corner. So I was just trying to get a little bit better understanding of where you're coming from when you said the word consistent.
Consistent. Yeah. So the idea that the business has performed consistently with how we said it would between now and the end of the year, that's what I was meaning to say. And pork and beef have done better. And so that's the important message. Prepared foods continues consistent as well.
Yeah, the framing of chicken was it's performing as we expected it to.
was just hoping you could flesh out the smaller pork packers that drove prices up in the last quarter. It seems to have embedded in the current quarter, driving to your better expectations for pork. Maybe just a little bit more color on what exactly is happening there.
I'll take first crack, if you don't mind.
Sure.
But, you know, we can't control what the industry does, obviously. It's a very competitive industry. The Tyson approach is simply, we look at what we're selling product for out there, and then we determine what we can afford to pay for hogs and at what point it becomes inefficient or uneconomical to do such. So, as far as what other companies do, when new companies come in, typically they're going to be aggressive, if for no other reason than they've got to determine their schedules. That's not something we can control. What we do is we aren't vertically integrated. We use the term virtually integrated. We have supply agreements with major hog producers, independent hog producers throughout the country, and we know we're going to get our hogs just simply because we've contracted to do that. So as long as we're able to manage the spread between the value of the pork we're selling and the price of the hogs we're buying, that's quite simply our business model. And to the extent anybody wants to remain in business very long, you've just got revenue and you've got expenses, so they have to manage that relationship as well. So from our perspective, it's all about just managing the spread.
Anyone else?
Well, with that, I guess we're gonna take it to a breakout, and thank you very much for participating.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.